Hi, I'm Leela Ainge, a psychologist researcher and someone who's been thinking a lot lately about what makes life feel really good. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour, bringing together fascinating research, insights and real-life experiences. This season, we're exploring joy, not just the theory of it, although yes, we will get into that, but how joy actually moves through our lives, how it shifts us and what it makes us do. Today, I've got Hannah Eisted, and she's a founder of HI Communications. She supports small business owners. She's also the author of The Best 90 Days Ever, a best-selling book on Amazon, and marketing membership. I joined Hannah earlier this year on her retreat in Wales, and it changed the way I approach using social media. It's fair to say that I was somebody who probably procrastinated for 3 hours and spent far too long faffing around with reels and videos. No more. Hannah has cured me of taking too long over my marketing. She's also got a podcast called The Best Marketing Podcast Ever. She shares marketing advice to help product and service businesses get out of their own way and consistently promote themselves. Welcome, Hannah Eisted, to the Psychologically Speaking podcast. It's great to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the retreat and why you decided to do one?
I love bringing people together in person. My degree is actually in event management, so that's kind of my background. And I love organising events and things. And I just felt like there was space for something, a retreat that was focused around marketing, where you could come and spend the time in a really nice environment and crack on with all the marketing stuff you needed to do. And as we spoke about a lot on the retreat, doing B-roll content in like a nice environment where you're actually proud to show it to someone else afterwards. I just thought that, yeah, there's a really nice like space for that. So I did one last year and a couple this year. And then we're actually going back to the venue in December for my husband Tom's mum's 70th. So I've been there like 4 times this year. I just love the venue so much.
The context, it's a beautiful country house in Wales with beautiful scenery and the rooms are just amazing. It's like, you know, when you want to do B-roll footage at home and, well, I don't know about your house, but my house, I have to move everything out of the way to make it look half, I don't know, nice. Move cushions. There's usually like Transformers and Pokemon stuff from the kid everywhere.
Literally. Like, you always think, I wish someone could, like an interior designer could just come and do my house and make my house look really nice. Well, that is literally what has happened to that venue. So you can just maximize it and get loads of videos. But I think my favorite bit of the retreat was the fact that you bought your van and then we went for a dip in the morning. That was so fun.
Was cool. Brought the camper van and we went for a cold water dip. I was so out of my comfort zone doing that. It felt like it was muddy in the bottom, but we didn't get muddy feet. It was ever so strange.
Yeah, it was very muddy, wasn't it? Yeah, quite sludgy.
Yeah, and it was May, so it wasn't hot. It was cool, but it was lovely.
It was really nice. Nice way to start the day.
I must admit, before I came on the retreat, I think one of the reasons I had signed up initially was I just never found time to do social media. And I'm very kind of on and off with it. So in the back of my head was I need to have a bit of a strategy. I knew that I was coming to the end of a contract and I'd be going all in on my research business. And I was pivoting a little bit what I was going to do. So obviously I've launched Psych Insights this year and done all sorts of wonderful stuff. And I just thought, oh God, I could really do just going away with other people and getting a bit of inspiration and finding the time. But the bit that really surprised me was just, I suppose, just noticing how uncomfortable I probably was with taking B-roll footage. And you must come across this all the time, but I didn't realise just how awkward I felt about it.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like that now, so it's definitely helped. But why do you think people feel so awkward about doing B-roll?
It is unnatural. You know, a lot of this stuff is weird. And I've been talking a bit this week about the fact that like promoting your business in 10 minutes is weird. It all feels very weird to us because we're used to things taking a long time and we're used to, you know, doing like, if we create a piece of video content, it would be a really amazing video. That's what we want to aim for.
Yes.
So just whacking up something of us holding a cup of tea does feel really strange because it is so quick and so easy and we're in front of the camera. And I think there's something else around that sometimes people feel there's an arrogance to it. So, you know, who am I to put up a picture of me having a cup of tea? Why is this important? Why am I, you know, I'm asking for someone's time when they look at my social media content. So it is unnatural and it is a bit unusual for us. But also I just come at it from the place of it's not a big deal. It's just no biggie. Like it just doesn't matter at the end of the day. And actually, if people think I'm cringe, then that's absolutely fine, because every time I do a post, I'm probably going to make money from it. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
I love that. And it's so simple, that reframe of, you know, if I'm cringe, I'm cringe, but this is about making money. The penny dropped earlier this year and I was like, I've just got to start doing it and stop thinking about it. I was overthinking the process of doing social media so much. I do all of this research with women around imposter phenomenon. And I think there are two concepts linked to the reason we feel weird about it and also the reason we put it off. One, because we have that narrative of who am I? What will people think? And that thing around deservedness. So this idea that we expect that we have to put in a whole load of effort to be able to get a reward at the end of it, or that you have to spend a long time on something to celebrate it. What are you waiting until Friday to celebrate? Celebrate it tomorrow, you know. Friday, the celebration day. Let's change that. If you can wake up on a Monday morning and be like, wow, I actually have woken up really excited to get into my business today, that's something to celebrate. Why are you waiting for Friday? It's almost like we're self-sabotaging ourselves at every single turn.
100%. And I think I am an underthinker. And I attract a lot of overthinkers into my world. And that's not even me describing them as overthinkers. That's them self-describing themselves as that. And I don't think either one is better than the other. They both have their places. But if you are noticing that the overthinking is getting in the way, the underthinking is definitely not getting in the way. If you're noticing that this overthinking is getting in the way of you wanting to do anything, be anything, celebrate anything, you know, make these moves that you want to make, then you need to do something about it. Like, you cannot just carry on going on like that, because you won't ever do anything. And I think a lot of people feel really stuck. And actually, the thing that is going to help them the most is doing one piece of action, whatever that is, whether that is celebrating on a Tuesday instead of a Friday. It's going to cause a reaction. Something else will happen because of that. And I just think that's like something really important to remember.
We can't feed up to anticipate reward, because we don't just get dopamine from the good thing. We get dopamine from anticipating the good thing. So if you're looking forward to a holiday, or you're looking forward to the 70th where you get to go back to this beautiful venue, these things are a good form of anticipation and dopamine being released. But it doesn't mean it's the only way to feel joy. And as I've been exploring joy this year, the more broad your experiences are, the more you enjoy life, because you're seeing more things and getting to taste more things in life. Doing smaller things more often with more frequency gives you multiple hits of the dopamine. It's probably better to be doing like 10 minutes every day, because then at the end of the week, you've got 7 opportunities of little moments of joy, whereas you might have ended up with an hour of a bit of frustration because you might have been feeling stressed that you've got to do everything in an hour once a week.
Yeah, and I think there's something around like the noticing the small steps as well, because actually a lot of people just won't even acknowledge that they are steps. And so we just go out like for the big thing. We want the big reward, when actually having a cup of tea in the garden is a big reward. You know, like, for example, me and Tom went and had sausages by the beach yesterday, and we could have thought, actually, no, we won't do that. A proper reward is to go out for dinner or something like that. But actually, that was so nice. And we can do both. We don't have to keep choosing the way in which we have these little rewards and these fun things that we do. We have to make them happen for ourselves, though. And yeah, I just think like all those small things, they are the bits that I love to romanticize, and I look for them and they keep me going when, you know, there's not always good stuff happening.
I think you're so right. I love the idea that we can just be a little bit more present, because there's a lot of criticism of marketing. People get a bit cringe about things like B-rolls and whatever. It's because we associate it with, oh, someone's trying to be an influencer. They're just people making money. And, you know, as one woman to another woman in business, you know, I don't care how you make your money. You're not doing it unethically. So if it means you need to go out and get B-roll every day, you just go and do that. We should be really supporting each other. The really interesting thing is that the way that you've kind of set up your business, I suppose, has been triggered and brought about because of your own personal circumstances. Do you want to just kind of tell us a little bit about how you ended up in the space of, right, 10-minute marketing, and this is going to be the way forward?
Yeah, so if I go all the way back to the beginning, in my second year of university, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease and I was unwell for quite a while. And then I was better, and then I left university. I had a couple of jobs after university, and I just really noticed that like the setup was not set up for my illness and my body and my energy levels and all of that. And I was traveling to Cambridge, and I would be driving 2 hours each way sometimes. It just didn't make any sense. And so eventually I left that, and I really wanted to set up a business that worked for me, even if I was going to be ill, or even if I was busy, or even if I had other stuff going on. And to be honest, it took me 6 years. I've been doing this 10 years, and the Best 90 Days Ever has been running for 4 years now. And it's taken me 6 years to find out what I wanted to focus on and kind of niche down to, if you will. But I just noticed that there were so many other people who either had chronic illnesses like me, or everyone is busy. I don't know anyone in my audience who isn't busy. Like, and everyone's target audience is busy people. We are all busy. And actually, a lot of this stuff that we were being taught, it didn't fit in with the amount of time that we seemed to actually have. Like, I just don't have 2 hours to spend on one piece of content when I'm doing podcasts like this, or you know, I'm doing all my other stuff within my business and trying to keep 2 dogs alive and, you know, like having a home and all of this. And, you know, I don't even have children. So add on that extra layer, and I just don't think there's enough time for things to be taking that long. So yeah, I just kind of noticed that. And I thought, right, how can I do something to make a difference and actually show people that it can be easy and it can be quick, and actually prove to myself as well that there were things that I could do in this short amount of time? And so that's what I've been doing for the last 4 years. I've got my timer here if anyone's watching on the video, but
mine as well.
Yeah, love that.
We use it a lot in our house. I tell you what it's used mostly for is for my son. When he's doing his homework, I'll be like, right, we're going to set the timer, 10 minutes, let's get it done.
Exactly. And it is that mindset of let's get it done. And yeah, I was noting that people were setting aside 2 hours for content, 3 hours to do this, when actually, if you set aside that amount of time, you are going to fill it with content and you probably don't need to. So that's what I've been doing over the last 4 years. And it is one of the things I've noticed this year is that it's changed my mindset in so many other areas of my business. So I'm noticing where I'm scrolling more and I'm procrastinating, and actually what are the things that I feel are going to take a long time and they probably won't, you know, in the end if I actually do them. And it had that knock-on effect into other areas as well. But yeah, I just have this really strong belief now that it can be quick and easy, even if it's not exactly 10 minutes, you know, we'll allow it to go over a little bit. But it is that belief that if you put these boundaries in for yourself, that it will get quicker and better.
There's definitely a subset of people who will be a fan of the way you work, who a deadline is really motivational. A deadline works for me. If I have got 2 hours, I can guarantee you it will be the last 10 minutes I'll get. if I'm, you know, if I'm really focused, yesterday I had a really focused day. I sat down at my desk, got my headphones on, husband was working behind me, and I just sat and worked really productively all day. But I can tell you that those days are few and far between for me. They're just like magical unicorn days. Fern, I will do 50,000 things other than the thing I'm supposed to do. But then there's something really weird happens when I bring out this little timer that you gave us on the retreat. If I set the timer, I'm like, right, I've got to finish it. And I like the challenge.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because you asked me about challenges.
Yeah.
Last time we spoke. So you're fundraising at the moment.
See, but I have almost my targets. I'm doing London Marathon next year for Crown Cyclists UK. Yeah, and I'm almost at the target of £2,500.
So you were fundraising and you were like, if you want 30 minutes and you want to donate, we'll get on a quick call. I was saying, well, in the new year, there's always loads of stuff comes out about goal setting. I've always shied away from doing anything around New Year's resolutions, but this year I really want to do something. We were talking about that. And you said, do you know what's really interesting is these TikTok challenges are really, people get really behind them. And in TikTok world, it's things come and go very quickly. Gamification is the thing, isn't it? Anything that we can gamify, if you're struggling with motivation or you're struggling with perfectionism, gamification from a psychological perspective is the thing that's going to get you out of that rut, and it's going to get you just doing it quickly and dirty, and done is better than not done, I suppose.
Yeah. It's like last week, did you see my task it that I was doing?
Wait, what did you do?
So it's like, oh shit. So it's basically this little basket. And it's,
I did see that. You've got a little thing attached to it, your microphone.
Yes. But it's got the tasks in it that I am putting off or procrastinating on, or I just don't feel like I have enough time to do.
Yeah.
And actually, someone was talking to me the other day who is an ADHD coach, and she was talking about novelty.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, because I do this a lot with the little tasks, but I would usually just use a bowl. And I was looking at my bowls thinking, I'm not inspired by any of these bowls. So I used this little basket I got at the car boot sale. And actually, the novelty of that has worked so well for me over the last couple of weeks. I've been swapping the scrolling time for a little task that's been in there. I've been getting loads of things done. And yeah, like noticing where I can turn it into a game and something fun has really helped me. And I do think that it does work.
It does, totally. There's so much research on just gaming and cyber gaming. If you think about it, you don't have to have an ADHD type brain to benefit from all the hacks that are used around ADHD. Make it, usually with goals, we say make it stretching, but not too hard, not too easy. Set yourself a time limit so that you do it, keep yourself accountable, share it, etc. And that's okay, but a lot of the times that traditional advice really falls flat because psychologically, once we've written it down, our brain goes, okay, I've started this, so it's no longer urgent.
Yeah.
And also I've started it, it's no longer novel. And it takes away a lot of the initial excitement, changing anything into a game and doing it with a timer and changing it up and having different times really helpful. The other thing is just the social element of bringing other people into your goals and tasks, even with your fundraising. You know, your initial thing is you've made that into such a very social thing, which is like, come for a chat, you know.
Yeah, that's so true. And actually, I was going to ask you something. So you brought this up just before we were speaking, but it's around like the being present. So being present in the moment and being present on social media.
Yeah.
I believe that you can be both. Like, I don't think that filming a B-roll or, I don't know, recording a moment takes you away from being present in that moment and being present with the people that you are with socially. But some people do really believe that. And they do believe that that's one of the things that holds them back from filming a B-roll or filming anything, is that they shouldn't be allowed to do that because it's not being present. But I think it is part of it. Like, so when I'm out socially, you know, I've been running these Gals Who Do Things events and we do loads of crafts and board games and things like that. I love filming it because I just think that's also part of the being there. And if I can show other people, then it's amazing and I'm capturing these little moments. But yeah, I'd love to know your thoughts on that. Like, can you be present and film something?
I think you absolutely can. And I think if we roll it right back and say, what do we do when we're social? So we're essentially saying, I think when people talk about, are you present or not present, they're saying, are you being social with other people or are you just being introverted and yeah. ignoring people around you and the world around you? So if we think about it more broadly like that, then you can start to think about how we behave in other people's company. One of the things as humans that we do is we're just wonderful storytellers and curators, and we are also people who document. So yeah. even before social media, even before cinematography, you know, people were writing down what happened in my day. I mean, if Samuel Pepys never wrote anything down, we wouldn't know a whole host of our history. There must have been people who'd be like, oh, there he is with his book again, writing, scribbling. Maybe, you know, people thought he was being antisocial.
Yeah.
So I wonder if just it's very easy. I think it's a cop-out, isn't it? And again, I think this is where we have to take a long, hard look in the mirror and go, why are we being judgmental?
Yeah.
Am I being judgmental because actually I find that cringy? I'm really uncomfortable to do that. I couldn't do that. And I've got two examples here. So I bought a little mini microphone recently and I've obviously got really comfortable with the sound of my own voice because I'm doing a podcast and, you know, I've had my business, I think, 4 years this year. So you get used to marketing. And I was out with my husband and I was trying to get it to work and we'd gone to a really noisy pub. And I'd said, well, let's test it here because it'd be a really good place to test the sound. And I was hoping to use it at a conference the next week. And he was so shy about me recording him in public, where I was like, oh, no, I'm just getting my camera out. And I was quite happy to look an absolute fool. I didn't care what anybody thought about me. And actually, nobody was really that interested. They were all having their pints. You know, they weren't interested in us. But it did make me realise, actually, when you're not doing it yourself, then that's when you're going to think it is unusual. But when you're doing it, it isn't. And then at the weekend, because I'd been quite poorly last week and I was behind on quite a lot of stuff. And I'd walked into town with my son, he was going off to a theatre club. And I'd taken my tripod with me, because it's a really nice place. So I said to my husband and my little boy, I'm going to take my tripod. I'm going to take some footage, you know, for B-roll. And that's what I do now. It's like, we're out, I'll try and do it. And I made it into some fun. So I gave my son the tripod and he took a photo of me. He thought that was great fun. I was able to show him how to use the camera. Yes, you could say that it's taking us out of the moment, but you could also say that it's just become a part of our curation and, you know, storytelling. And I would probably say, isn't talking about our business is just storytelling?
Yeah. And didn't your son like give you a pose or something to try? I love that.
I was sat on the steps and I'm quite an awkward person when I take photos. And he's like, Mummy, you just need to sit like this. And he sat down and straight away got a pose. I was like, oh my goodness. He's that YouTube age, you know, he's a generation that's only grown up with iPhones. But yeah, he's angling for a job as my social media manager, I think.
I think he could be up for it. But it's that thing of you're all enjoying it then, aren't you? Like it's a fun thing to do. Like saving your memories and doing something fun. I think maybe the shift comes when no one wants to do any type of filming and like it takes over the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that, like the idea of curating and documenting. That's so true.
Maybe it is, but you know, there's lots of other stuff going on as well. But it's really curious. And we were talking earlier, so you have the best 90 days ever, which is your main service. Oh, it's almost a mini community.
Yeah, so it's a membership and there's 140 business owners in there at the moment. And it basically happens every 90 days. So we do a daily 10-minute marketing task. And I give you the task every day. We have weekly themes. And then every 90 days, it kind of shifts around to another set of 90-day tasks, basically. And yeah, it's been going for 4 years now. So we're just about to come into the final one of this year. So the last one is obviously October, November, December. And yeah, it's also been turned into a book as well.
What's really intriguing, though, because we were talking very briefly earlier about seasonality and whether we notice seasonality, and it just occurred to me that you've set up a seasonal business because every 90 days is every quarter, right? So you're literally doing something different every quarter, but it's the same format. What are you noticing about people and their, I suppose, what their inner dialogue's telling them about seasons and what they can and they can't do with their business?
So it does, it links up with the quarters, and I change the tasks each quarter. Like, some of them stay the same. We always do goal setting and we do quite different ways of doing that as well, but we always have a few set ones, and then I change them depending on what we're going to be thinking about. So like the summer season that we just had was very much about quick content prompts. It was about warming up your audience before August. You know, it was about things that I thought people would be thinking about over that period. And then the Christmas one does change again. So there's a lot of things around Christmas sales. And then at the end of the year, we have things like one of the weeks is called wrapping up the year. There's like very seasonal things. Yeah. So it is seasonal. And one of the things I've been talking about during this launch is that I think a lot of business owners don't realize how seasonal their business are, and I probably felt the same about mine actually before I started the Best 90 Days Ever, because it's quarterly. One of the things that I noticed was, so I'm like a big planner and I have Trello boards for each of my launches. So every quarter there's a new Trello board. I have my Christmas Trello board, I've got my Valentine's Day Trello board, you know, I've got Trello boards coming out my ears. And they are very themed, even if I didn't necessarily realize it. So as I'm now moving into this period, my content has shifted from the blues of the sea to more brown colors and things like that. I'm using like all my autumn pictures. The things I'm talking about are changing. So I'm now thinking about the last 90 days of the year rather than that mid-year kind of conversation. And yeah, I don't think a lot of business owners almost recognize that in themselves, because it's very repeatable, which saves me loads of time every single year. Like, I know what I'm going to say next October. It will be the same. I don't need to overcomplicate it and try and like come up with something brand new. I'm going to talk about something very similar to what I'm talking about now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would encourage businesses to just have a look at where these themes come up across the year, what they are and how they can be repeated, so that you can repeat them next year, because it's going to save you so much time.
Such good advice. I've got two or three autumn blogs, and every year without fail I go back through them and I pull out maybe one or two lines. It becomes a bit of inspiration for an email. There's one on ghosting, because nice. Obviously,
yes.
And I really love that blog. Every year, the research is updated and release it and say, why do people ghost? Because you get ghosting in friendships, not just in romantic relationships. And people are just generally quite interested. And even though, as a psychologist who supports business owners, that's not what my business owners are coming to me for, we do get potential clients who ghost us. I think there's something about the kind of mindset we're in at different times of the year as well, especially when the seasons are linked so closely to it. You make the most of the summer, and you were in a dinghy summer, which was hilarious.
Get me out of that dinghy.
So cool.
If we look at the big brands and the big companies, I always give the example of Christmas. Like, I get the Good Housekeeping magazine every year for Christmas. Yeah. It's the same every single year, and I still buy it, and I don't expect it to be different. I know they're going to tell me who was in Strictly. They're going to give me a gift guide. They're going to, tell me how to cook my turkey. There's going to be Christmas fashion. Like, we don't have to overcomplicate it. The overall themes of our business can stay the same. And then, like your example, the details can change. But if we are spending so much time trying to make Christmas different to other Christmases, it's exhausting. Like, we just don't need to. And actually, those things are recognizable and familiar for our audience as well. They are expecting to see that. And so you can then shift the way that you talk about the turkey. for example, and change it in that way. I don't think we need to make things so complicated in every area, literally every area of our lives, to be honest with you.
You're also doing something else, which is really, probably unintentional, but really special. And this is really hooky for your kind of client, which is you're creating, when you do that repeatable thing, is you're creating a level of nostalgia and comfort for them. Yeah. So your ideal client, whether they have come and done 90 days before or will do it again in the future, I'm sure people do it more than once, etc. You know, it's such a great concept. Because it's repeatable, there's that level of comfort that I know what to expect. I know this is going to happen every 90 days. I know I've got a chance to take part of it, or I've seen the results that people get. So it's really clever.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I love that idea of the nostalgia. And I think I even notice it in things that people say to me. So I posted probably maybe like 6 years ago a video of me dressed as a pumpkin in my dog's Halloween costume. And people still mention that, but they also, like, they've said to me, when are you going to start your Halloween content? When are we going to start to see the pumpkins? And like, how are the pumpkins in the garden? And it becomes those things that you are known for as well. And I think that's why I encourage a lot of business owners to share things that are outside of their business as well, because it's those connection points with people that makes people think of us, basically.
And it's fun, is it not? Who doesn't love a pumpkin? Things have shifted for me since May. I wouldn't say I am churning out masses of content, but I have done a lot more. And the really interesting thing, I think I shared this with you, is when I look through my metrics, which I never used to do, the difference in, like, cause it's the number of reels. And I've actually had followers this year on my Instagram account, which I haven't had for years. I've had like 150 extra followers, which is quite a lot. Tin was the most surprising for me. Because I was always a bit like, what shall I post? And I've taken so many more selfies than I normally would.
They love a selfie on LinkedIn, don't they?
It's strange. It's like, I wonder if it is because for many, many years, LinkedIn was very kind of staid, professional, a bit stuffy. Mm. And I think secretly people do just want Facebook for business. And again, just going back to that curation and socialness and just storytelling, people like that on LinkedIn. They don't want to be sold to overtly, but they do want to see a little story. So yeah, I put that picture up that my son took on Sunday, and yeah, loads of people commented on it and said, oh, hi. And I only put that up because I've been off poorly and thought, I've not done any content for a few weeks, I'm a bit behind, I'll just put a selfie up. And it takes away some of the pressure because you're like, oh, a minute's done.
Yeah.
Think it. It's like, well, I'll put something rather than nothing.
And do you know what? It's not about churning out the content either. And like, it's about that curation. Like, it is about putting things out, looking at them, seeing how they did, looking at those metrics and thinking, okay, that felt good for me. Obviously, my audience seemed to like that as well. I'm going to do a little bit more of that next time. So yeah, it's not necessarily about getting it out for the sake of it. Sometimes people do need to do that. If they are in their own head, I think just whack it out. Like, literally, we need to stop talking about it now. You need to just post it. Yeah. But yeah, a lot for most business owners is just about making it quicker and knowing that they can, like knowing that they can post in 10 minutes or they can do a very quick post rather than it becoming this like huge deal then that they need to kind of tackle before they even get on with it.
I think one of the things that I like with this whole 10 minute stuff is if you do put something out, and I've done this, I put something out and I'm like, oh, you know, it could have been better. Because I've done it once, it's so much easier to then just do it and do it better. And the thing is, your audience might never have seen it the first time around anyway. So especially over summer, I've posted loads of stuff over the summer because I had lots of spare time because I was at home with my boy over the summer. I'm happy to, you know, reuse that stuff because I know there are people who literally took the summer off. So I'm like, well, they've not heard that. They've not seen it. They've not read it. I'll just post it back out again.
It's also why That's also why you should do it when you have a small audience as well. Don't let the small audience be the reason that you aren't posting anything, because you've got like an amazing opportunity now to practice and have a go. And like you say, reuse it, repurpose it. I always say to people as they're building their email lists, if they send out an email and you've only got, I don't know, 10 subscribers, then send that email out again next year, because like hopefully it will have grown by then and they won't have seen it. So there's lots of different ways that you can use that content.
I think one of the biggest marketing lessons I've learned this year was really unexpected. I have a small email list, small following on Instagram. I'm also in lots of different spaces, so people don't just know me for one thing, which can be tricky to navigate from a messaging perspective. But the one thing that has just absolutely blown my socks off this year is how sending regular and consistent messages to the same people. My business this year, bearing in mind I put it into dormant then reopened it about 3 months ago. The people who have bought off me are people who have been on my list for a long time.
And
they are people who are not bored of listening to me or seeing my emails, clearly. I went through and anyone who's bought anything off me, like my Psych Insights or done a coaching session or bought a package, I've been through and checked when they joined my mailing list. And most people joined me 2 to 3 years ago.
Wow.
So it tells me that it takes a long time when you're a psychologist and a coach to build a relationship with people. But when you do, that they're with you for longer, I think. You probably know that already as a marketer, but yeah.
Yeah, I think, because the interesting thing is that sometimes, well, for a lot of them, it's not the amount of time. It's not the fact that it's taken 2 years or 3 years. It's the fact that maybe they needed 30 emails from you. And if you were sending one email a month, that is going to take 3 years for them to buy because they need those 30 emails. Whereas this launch, I've sent a daily email. So I've pushed people through those 30 days of emails in 1 month. And
yeah.
So if that's what it takes for them to understand what I'm offering and selling, and daily emails is not for everyone. That's absolutely fine. But yeah, sometimes it's just kind of noticing how long people take to understand you, to know what you do, to trust you, and knowing there are ways you can speed up that process, but you might need to produce a little bit more content and increase that frequency as well.
I think the second shocker is that telling people exactly what they can buy and how they can buy it also works.
That's unbelievable. Wow.
I would definitely say I fell into the category. When I first launched my business, I was working mostly with other businesses. So I was B2B. I was doing consultancy. My work was mostly word of mouth, police forces, councils, that kind of thing. And so when I was sending out my emails and creating an email list, I didn't really know why I was talking to these people, what to give them, what to sell them. And then earlier this year, obviously got much clearer on that at your workshop where I had time to sit and actually think. There was absolutely no way I was not going to leave without having thought about that. But yeah, then just really tightening that up and saying to people, oh, hey, I've got something and you can buy it and here's how. And making that easy. And again, it's like really obvious stuff.
It's not.
I'd fallen into that trap of people tell you, oh, it's a slow year, business is really slow. And I think these are sometimes very valid things to say, but also excuses, because every business is different. I don't think everyone's having a bad year. I think you've got to just kind of keep chipping away at it and keep doing stuff. So,
and it might be that you need to change something. You know, if it's not the same year as you had the year before, then something needs to be different and you need to kind of shift it along. But yeah, I agree. And I was talking to someone recently and they said, how's your year been? And I was like, yeah, it's been a really good year, actually. Like, had a lovely year. And she was like, it's so refreshing to hear someone say that, because
yeah.
She is in like the physical space. They have a shop and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, maybe it has been a tough year for a lot of them. And I can understand that. And she was like, it's actually really refreshing to know that some people are having a good year and we can too. So yeah, it's kind of reframing it and thinking about it that way. But a lot of this stuff, we think it's obvious once you know it, but then... I've always thought that if you have like a corporate, well, just a job basically before you become self-employed, there is a lot of mindset there around things are good. If things are good, they have to take a long time. Yeah. I have to be in this office from 9 to 5, whether it takes me half an hour or it takes me 6 hours. So you kind of just learn to structure your work like that. Whereas when you're self-employed, it's allowed to be really quick. It's allowed to be easy. You're allowed to send as many emails as you like. It's a different way of thinking. And that freedom, I think, can be quite frightening. And so we go back automatically into the format that we learn when we had jobs. And I know that I do that sometimes. I will be almost, not anxious, but a bit jittery. I'm not at my desk for 9 a.m. I've never been at my desk for 9 a.m. Like, that's not what I aim for. But I think, oh, I should be there by now.
It's interesting, all these temporal kind of landmarks that we talk about in terms of, you know, you've got your fresh start effects with new weeks, new days, fresh new day, new start. I can start again. I can turn over a new leaf, you know. And then there's the kind of routines that get us going with stuff like some people really look forward to like weekly co-working sessions, and that's when they get all their admin done. Other people have to be at their desk, otherwise they won't get anything done. And other people actually probably get more done when they're not at the desk. I have all my good thoughts while I'm cooking, actually, or in the garden.
Walking the dog.
Yeah, totally. It is really interesting. I think there's so much to be said around the psychology of how social we are, though, and thinking about why we have these kind of inner kind of scripts that tell us that we shouldn't do stuff, when actually, if you just stop thinking judgmentally about your own actions, you can just kind of get on with it and just go, yeah, well, I've done it now. So there we go. And, you know, every day is a new day. You can just start again. I don't think anyone's ever going to go back through your social media and go, well, on that particular day, I just wouldn't have posted that. That was terrible.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's ever done that on my social media.
Who's got the time? Honestly, like, I'm doing a talk next week and for Social Media Conference Cymru, and the first slide of my presentation says, you are not that important. And I sent it to the organiser and she said that was a slap in the face this morning. But it's a line from a book called Blue Sisters, and the mum said it to the daughter. I'm not saying it was nice, but it really made me think that we just are not that important. We are not the main character in other people's lives. No one is that worried or upset or concerned about what you're doing. And if they are, then there's something else that is going on there potentially. But, you know, it's just not that important. Like, it just doesn't matter that much. So do what you need to do. Get all that stuff out there and just remember that you are not being thought about by other people as much as you probably think you are.
I love that. I love that quote. You're not that important. My annual goal has been joy. And so that's where the podcast has come through. And I've been finding joy in lots of different weird and wonderful ways. And I can now say that I get joy out of filming B-roll.
Yes, my work here is done.
Exactly, it's all done.
Yeah, I think if you can, then if you can find joy from it, then it's going to make it so much easier. And if you can't find joy from it, what's the point?
Exactly. We have to have fun with our lives and with our work.
Yeah.
Hannah, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. I think everyone should go and check out your podcast, which is the best marketing podcast ever. Have I got that one?
Yeah.
You've also got a book called The Best 90 Days Ever, and your 90 day, that's open now, isn't it?
Yeah, you can generally join up until like the end of the first week of October.
Okay,
cool. But don't tell anyone I said that because it does start on the 1st.
I'll have to get this out before the 1st now. That's going to motivate me. That gives me my time limit.
Yeah, there's your deadline. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Psychologically Speaking today with me, Leela Ainge. That's all for now, but a reminder to please like and rate and review the podcast. It really does help independent podcasters like me.